This is Tape 6, Side A of the Open University course English 102, Composition and Native Indian Literature 1. On this tape, course author Patty Hartford talks to Emily Warrior, the author of Compatriots. This interview was recorded at the Open Learning Agency in Burnaby on February 18, 1993. Emily Warrior is in Brockett, Alberta, and Patty Hartford is at her home in Kamloops, B.C.
What is it that made you decide to become a writer in the first place?
Well, I took an essay course in University of Calgary, and the professor told me one of my essays was a descriptive essay, and he really liked it, and he said, try to get this published. And I couldn't, you know. I brought it to this man who writes Indian stories. He wasn't Indian, but he writes Indian stories, and he was very well known. And he said, you know, there wasn't any market for it. And so I just was kind of discouraged. I put it away. And later on, I met Elizabeth Cooklin, who was a professor in Cheney, and I was going to school down there, and I showed her that essay, and she told me, she showed me how to write a manuscript, and I sent it off. She gave me an address, and they published it, and that was the first thing I had published. So Liz Cook gave me a lot of encouragement, and it took a lot of pushing, and probably, you know, encouraging me to take any kind of a writing course. And the only thing that was open was poetry, and I didn't like poetry. I thought poetry was so stuffy, and I just didn't care about it. So I took poetry, and the professor told me he was going to give me his once in 5 years speech. This was at the end of the course, and he told me, I only give this speech once in 5 years, because once in 5 years I come across someone who can write. And so he was another person who gave me a lot of encouragement. And so I decided to go further, and I went to the University of Washington. I got into the master's program for creative writing, and it was really difficult for me, because I was in there with people who had written, who had been high school editors, and you know, had a lot of stuff published, and I was sort of just learning as I was going.
Do you write about things that happened to you personally?
Some of it, yes. People tell me stories. You know, some people can really tell stories. I just write about things that, you know, happen to people and myself.
What do you think is the most important thing for Native people to write about?
Liz Cook told me that Simon Ortiz said, writing is a political activity. I wouldn't consider myself politically knowledgeable. I do think that what you write about should be something that you're very interested in. Myself, I'm interested in spirituality and how it's been exploited, and maybe Indianness and how that's been exploited, and the struggle of people who are awash in a technological society. You have nothing to grasp, nothing to give meaning to your life. Of course, this is from my, you know, my experience. I find it difficult. Like my children and my grandchildren have a much different childhood than what I had. Indian culture has changed so drastically from when I was a child to their now when in their childhood, because they're so battered by technology. Maybe I should focus it onto the media, you know, the movies that come out and the television and even Nintendo games, you know, everything is decided for them. You know, they're caught, trapped by, you know, every way they turn, sort of the couch potato syndrome in a way. Even spirituality is sort of a commodity. Now people come to the reserve and they can almost just buy it. And so I see all these people who come here and they get danced around and they get their faces painted and they get Indian names, and then they go away and I wonder what goes on in their heads. To me, that's, I don't know, playing with the culture, I would say.
So how do you feel about non-Native writers writing fiction about Native people? Does this fall into the same category?
Probably, for the most part. I would, you know, it's like this man who's very successful writing Indian stories, you know, making fun, and even Indian people, you know, they read it, and myself, I read, and some of it is quite humorous, but I don't know what his intentions are. He's, some of it is offensive to me.
Why is it offensive?
Well, on the surface, first of all, he uses pidgin English, you know, broken English. That is kind of offensive to me. Like it's like standing on the Indian, keeping him in his place, like he can't even speak proper English. And then the whole, like Lynn Andrews does that. The other person I was talking about is Kinsella. But Lynn Andrews, the Hollywood shaman, that's another person who is very popular with white middle class people. And, you know, she's in Hollywood typing out all this stuff and enormously successful, you know, writing about Indian medicine. You know, that kind of carries over into what I write. You know, I'd like to put my story forth, you know, so people can see something else. From the other side.
I'd like to talk to you more a little later about the kinds of things that you write. I'd really like to know now who you like to read. Who are your favorite writers?
People like Roxy Gordon. I think Roxy's a Comanche, and he writes short stories, and one in particular I just really enjoyed was called The Pilgrims. It's a story about an old man who goes on a pilgrimage to go see his where he grew up, and he's like trespassing on white land, and I really enjoyed that story. And also Lee Ann Howe, first name is two words. She wrote a short story called An American in New York, and it's just hilarious. It's really great. And another writer I enjoy is Elizabeth Cook Lynn, who was my instructor at one time. And she writes a lot of good stuff. And one I can remember right now is, I think it was called The Clearest Day. And that's very, very enjoyable. And then there are poets. I like Yakima, Earl Thompson. Earl Thompson has great poetry. I guess Jim Welch really did a good job on Winter in the Blood, because I always enjoy rereading that book. And and of course, Mama Day's Housemaid of Dawn is one of my favorites.
You read mostly Native writers, or?
These are all Native writers.
Do you read mostly Native writers, or do you?
Well, I read mostly, I guess, ethnic writers, because I used to teach ethnic literature, you know, and so that's more or less my area.
What do you think is your own best work?
I guess I would be inclined to say Compatriots, because people like it. And I guess that's the reason I would say it's my best work, is what people say, you know, what people have to say about it. Although that first descriptive essay that was published, I've heard people tell me, Native people, I really liked it. It took me back where I came from. You know, so, but I guess just the general feedback of, you know, people who read, they like Compatriots. So I guess I would have to go with Compatriots.
What's the name of this other essay?
Of what?
Of the essay.
The other essay is called White Breast Flats. People like to say white flat breasts.
Where was it published?
It was published in a book called A Gathering of Spirit, edited by Beth Brandt.
What do other people generally say about your work?
Well, Compatriots has to do with a white person who's taken over become Indian, so to speak. And I guess it isn't a new thing, you know. I hear they have clubs in England, or you know, in Great Britain and Wales, I think, and in Germany, where they where people have encampments, and everybody has Indian clothes, like buckskin beaded, and you know, I hear they're quite authentic, you know. So they must come and buy the stuff, or they. I even met an Englishman one time, and he had in his apartment beautiful work, artifacts, and I said, "Where did you get this and this?" And I couldn't believe it. I thought he got them, like, because they looked so old, you know. I thought he got them from a museum, or I didn't know where he get them. I was real curious, and I said, "Where did you get this and this?" You know, I was just agog walking around in his place, and he said, "I made them." And I just about fell over, because, you know, some of that stuff looked very old. So, you know, he's kind of crawled into the past somehow and learned how to make these things, you know, that you usually see in museums.
Some authors have expressed it to me, and some students have mentioned to me that they feel that non-Native people sometimes have a need to connect with the earth and with the past, and since we have very little past as immigrants to North America, we want to attach ourselves to something that has more depth and more spiritual meaning, and this is the reason for this desire to be Indian or to be like Indian. I don't know whether there's validity in that or not, but it's certainly a viewpoint that's been expressed to me.
My feelings about it are invasion, you know, being invaded, because when you grow up on a reserve and all your role models are taken away from you and you're placed in a, or I should say confined in a school with white role models who discount your Indianness and call your beliefs, you know, they try to uproot your world by telling you that your people are savage and they're pagans and, you know, you're little more than a dumb beast. I have a real problem with, I guess, you know, living for 10 years in a boarding school and with that being, you know, being beat into, you know, it's very hard to feel sympathetic to people who now want to take that those sacred beliefs and just those, of course, are my personal feelings. I don't know how other people feel. Like these people who give names and paint people, I don't know what, of course they're much older than I, and they may be still, they probably have different ideas about it.
I just want to come back just for a second to this question of criticism. So people who have commented on your work, what kind of response do you get on the reserve itself? Do you get positive feedback from people that you know and work with there?
People don't read that much on the reserve. You know, it's a couple of people who've been to university or taken classes away from the reserve have talked to me about it, and it's such a writing is something that's quite new or not done a lot here on the reserve, that they're really impressed, you know, that they see something published, and like one somebody told me, "You're my idol," and I just thought, "Oh, me?" You know, I grew up with this terrible sense of failure.
But why don't we have you read? Do you have a story?
All right. Should I start now?
Sure.
The inside of the teepee was stunning. It was roomy, and the floor was covered with buffalo hides. Backrests, wall hangings, parfleche bags, and numerous artifacts were magnificently displayed. Helmet-walking Eagle sat resplendent amidst his wealth. The women were dazzled. Lucy felt herself gaping and had to shush her children from asking any questions. Helmet looked at them intently and rested his gaze on Hilda. Hilda walked toward him, her hand extended in greeting, but Helmet ignored it. Helmet turned to his wife and asked in Blackfoot, "Who is this?" "She says she's from Germany," was all Elsie said before making a quick move toward the door. "Wait," he barked in Blackfoot, and Elsie stopped where she was. "I only wanted to know if you're familiar with my home Do you know what she's talking about? Helmut asked Elsie in Blackfoot. Elsie shook her head in a shamed manner. Why don't you ask her questions about Germany? He hurled the words at Hilda. Then looking meanly at his wife, he added, she's been there. Elsie flinched and, forcing a smile, waved weakly at the intruders and asked them in a kind voice to come outside. As Lucy waited to leave, she looked at Helmut, whose jaw twitched with resentment. His anger seemed to be tangibly reaching out to them. Wow, whispered Hilda in Lucy's ear. Outside, Flora touched a book on the fold-out table. Its title read, Indian Medicine, and in smaller letters, A Revival of Ancient Cures and Ceremonies. There was a picture of Helmut and Elsie on the cover. Flora asked, is this for sale? No, that one's for someone here at camp, but you can get them in the bookstores. How much are they? Flora asked, turning the book over. They're $27. A lot of work went into it, Elsie replied. Helmut in Blackfoot called out his wife's name, and Elsie said to her unwelcome callers, I don't have time to visit. We have a lot of things to do. She left them and went in to her husband. Do you think she wrote that book? Lucy asked Flora. He's the brains, she's the source, Flora said. Let's go. My kids are probably wondering what happened to me. I'm sorry I upset her husband. I didn't mean to, said Hilda. I thought he would be willing to teach me something because we're both German. Maybe you could buy his book, suggested Lucy. Look, said Flora, if you're going to be around for a while, I'm going to Sundance this next week, and I'm taking a few days off work. I have a friend up north who can teach you about Indian religion. She's a medicine woman. She's been to Germany. Maybe she even went to your hometown. Oh, really? Gushed Hilda. Of course I'll be around. I'd love to go with you and meet your friends. You can come into the sweat with us. First, you'll need to buy 4 squares of cotton, began Flora. But Hilda wasn't really listening to her. She looked as if she were already miles and miles away in the North Country. Now, a sweat, she thought, would be real Indian.
Thank you very much, Emily. We've talked at length about some of your other writing and some of your attempts to paint an unwhitewashed picture of reservation life. Do you write primarily for a native or a non-native audience, or do you even think about that as you write?
Well, I guess both, you know. I think it's important for both. But I think primarily a little bit more than Indian folk. I think it's the audience is white because what more white people read. And I think it's important for white people to get a clear picture of what goes on the reserve.
Do any of your stories show the positive sides of reservation life? Compatriots seems, I wouldn't say that bleak is the word, but certainly Lucy's surroundings are not, it's not a beautiful picture. Do you, in any of your work, do you paint a brighter picture of the positive things, say the spirituality that you were talking about earlier?
Well, I think myself, the earth, the geography, the topography, physical surroundings are very spiritual to me. You know, the river, the mountains, the hills, the Porcupine Hills, and the prairie, you know, and even the weather, you know, the climate, the winter, the fierce winter and the sweet summer. You know, they're all part of some saving grace that seems to balance all the negative stuff that happened with people. You know, the race relations that, you know, aren't the best, and the family discord, and the whole scene, you know, the socioeconomic ills. There's a connection people have to make with the land, and I think you know, that's where it begins, with the land and the fauna and the flora. As well as, you know, the language, you know, people who still speak Blackfoot. It's a real shame that Blackfoot is not much importance is given to the language, you know, in saving it. I know they have Blackfoot program in school, but that doesn't come near to saving the language. I think the language somebody said somewhere, or I read it somewhere, that the language is the heartbeat of the culture. And once you lose the language, you lose, you know, the core of the culture.
I think we have an essay in the course that says exactly that. So what kind of changes do you think are necessary in Native communities?
I think educated people are people who are willing to invest in either their own future or the future of those around them. And I think that's where it has to be. It has to be people who are willing to work hard and get an education and put their minds together, because we have to, it's inevitable, we have to be bicultural. You have to be skilled in living to white people's expectations and to your own. And if you're biculturally competent, I think you have a good chance of straightening things out or making the world work for the people who live here. So being bicultural means you have to be educated and you have to be structured the way white people are and play by white people's rules. And at the same time, try to respect and maintain your Indianness. It's really difficult because white values counter Indian values almost at every point. Structure and organization of white people and their time orientation is a big obstacle to Indians. Because they're not used to that, and so you have to learn white people's skills, and then at the same time try to keep your Indian values alive.
What kinds of things do you like to do? I know you're working on this schooling. When that's finished, what are your plans?
Well, I would like to keep one foot in the literary part of my life and the other foot in mental health, because I think mental health is something that needs attention with Natives, whether they're on the reserve or off. And then my own heartaches in life and difficulties. I think if I'd had the right kind of counseling a long time ago, you know, I would have probably not had all the troubles that I did.
I'd like to come back to compatriots just for a minute and ask you if you could offer any advice to a student who is about to read compatriots. What would you suggest to that student?
Well, I think you have to go into it with an open mind, you know, so that you, I don't know how it affects people, you know, if they get offended by it. You know, I would have to know what's the most common reaction to it. If are they offended by it? Do you know?
I certainly wasn't offended. I've used the story in a class on the reserve in Kamloops, and I found that the students were very much supportive of the things that you have to say. Particularly, they could identify with the experience of non-native people trying to be Indian or adopt Indian ways, and they were, like you, resentful of that. They very much appreciated the character of Lucy because they felt that she was a real person and was very kind and very hospitable despite the rudeness of others around her. She was very gracious and very kind to others. And so generally, the Native students that I've had were certainly supportive. As a non-Native person myself, I found it, I didn't find it offensive in any way. I felt, and I don't know whether this was your intention or not, but I felt that you have here good characters and bad, and there are no lines of race or heritage here. There are good and bad qualities in most of the characters. Some seem to be pretty miserable to one side or the other, but basically, I appreciated it because I don't see the stereotypes here. I don't see the I see some of the standard stereotypical situations, you know, the poverty on the reserve and that sort of thing. But I think those things are also real, and I think you've taken a fairly realistic look at life on the reserve, and you can't argue with reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I really don't have anything to say except, you know, just that it's things that really happen. And just take life for what it is.
You could give me some information on how you see Hilda.
How do I see Hilda? I wish I knew Hilda. I see Hilda as someone who's well, you know, she's an educated woman. She has university education. But someone who wants to get in touch with the earth, you know. And also, this is what I've heard, because I had a German schoolmate or a classmate when I was in university. And she said that they had Indian clubs in Germany, and that she had grown up with a writer who was very popular, sort of like Zane Grey, you know, who writes a lot of Indian stories. Like, Zane Grey, I don't think he wrote Indian stories. He wrote Westerns, I think. In fact, I don't even know if Zane Grey was an author or if that was a character.
No, he was an author.
But he was, this person, she used Zane Grey. That's why I used Zane Grey, because she's the one who said, you don't like Zane Grey. Anyway, this man, I don't remember his name, but he wrote a lot of books, sort of like Louis L'Amour, probably, Western stories of Indians. And So they grew up like that, reading about Indians, and I think in a very romanticized ideas, you know, about Indian people. My son, when he was 14, he's a dancer. When he was 14, he went with a group of dancers from Calgary, mostly Blackfoot, and they went to Germany for 5 weeks. And they danced over there, and that lady, the one I went to school with, said they had Indians are very popular, and a lot of people want to come to America to look for real Indians and live, you know, amongst them, to see, you know, to continue their literary experience, but to like make it real. So that's how I kind of had this idea of Hilda, that she wants to find out for herself. She's a curious person, and who's also looking for spirituality. So that's what I think of Hilda. But I guess I'm a slow writer, because I wrote another, a sequel to it, and then I have other, you know, chapters. I was thinking of maybe, you know, collecting all this stuff and making a novella before I, you know, like just make one novella instead of one chapter every few years.
Thank you very much, Emily. I really appreciate it.